This is the West Texas Dispatch. I'm George Levesque. In May of 2023, Weldon Hurt was elected mayor of Abilene. It was a crowded race, but one that saw Mr. Hurt come out on top. Fast forward 3 years, and he's running for re-election on the upcoming May ballot. The difference? He's running unopposed. Mayor Hurt joining us in the studio. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's so good to be here. So honored to always be here. I appreciate it.
We appreciate having you. Yeah. How does this compare? You know, 3 years ago, you're running opposed multiple candidates. This time, it's just you on the ballot.
I have to admit, it's a lot easier to be unopposed. You know, I think opposition elections are healthy, but, you know, when you're in that position of running and being unopposed, it's a lot easier.
And I was going to ask if you get a lot of free time, but I also know, you know, you're at all kinds of things representing the city all the time. It's a busy job, isn't it?
It's a busy job. I'm, you know, blessed and honored to do it, but probably a little bit more than I thought it was going to be. But, you know, it's just honored to do it, you know, and it's pretty fun sometimes.
Why'd you want to do it again?
Well, you know, we had just hired our new city manager, and, you know, she'd been there actually, you know, a little less than a year, and I hated to just kind of drop everything that we had going. And, you know, I mean, she's very capable of getting it done, but I just wanted to kind of close out with her.
Are there some things that you still want to finish out? Some legacy that you want to leave behind?
Well, you know, we couldn't have predicted what's going on in our city right now anyway, but yes, I definitely want to try to, you know, curtail this housing issue that we have, especially rentals. You know, just be a part of that, you know, a part of a solution. You know, I don't have all the answers, but we're definitely trying to come up with, you know, not only short-term but long-term, you know, help to this housing situation.
The mayor, of course, presides over the city council. If my math is correct, you're about to start your 10th year either on the council or as mayor. How would you rate this current crop of councilmen that you're working with day in and day out?
You know, I've been blessed to serve with a lot of different councilmen through the years while on council and as mayor. And, you know, I'm always amazed and admire people that are willing to give their time and effort, you know, to run for council. So, you know, you've got a pretty contested race here on place four. Place three is unopposed. You know, Jay, he's a downtown businessman and, you know, Howard and Simmons graduate. Think he brings a lot to the table. So just the diversity that we've had, you know, through our conversations with you know, even this last council, it's healthy. You know, we're not all up there just voting yes every time. Even though we may agree a lot, we always have very good conversation, and I think that's healthy.
I was going to say, when you tune in to the council meetings, that's one thing that you catch, is that there is a lot of conversation. There's a lot of back and forth, and apparently some people are reading the board packets that are coming out too, which you get every couple of weeks, and it's a lot of pages. But that research, they're having to do that.
Right. Right. And, you know, people want transparency, and they want an easier way to do that. Well, we have to do that every other week, read those long packets. That's really about the only way you can get the information is just go read it yourself.
So much going on with the city right now. You got more tax dollars coming in. I know you're trying to be careful with those because if you start adding things, you got to keep paying for them even if those tax dollars go away. What are you anticipating as far as budget time goes?
Well, you know, we'll have some one-time money. We know that we're going to have, you know, a sales tax surplus. But what you, just like you said, what you don't want to do is spend that on recurring income. Mm-hmm. You know, what can we spend it on right now? You know, the way a city budget works, you know, you wish you could just put it in a savings account, but unfortunately you can't. You know, you have your budget, what comes in over like this excess sales tax, you know, it has to be a one-time spend. So you want to be very careful. You know, we want to do something that's going to be beneficial to our city, but yet you don't want it to cause recurring income. So, you know, we need to get our people paid, too. You know, we're in some negotiations with our firefighters right now. Next year we'll have negotiations with our police officers. We definitely want to take care of our first responders. But we also want to take care of those other 900 employees that work for the city, too. That really their pay raises have not came as quickly as the first responders. And, you know, anyone that works for the city of Abilene is important to me, and it's important that we get them compensated. Inflation hurts a city just like it does a homeowner. Our costs are more, and so we need to try to pay our people more. But our overhead that we run the city with, it's higher. It costs more to pick your trash up now. So we have to factor all that in. And like I say, we're all going to have some one-time spend, but we really need to use that wisely. We need to let it come in, see how much it is, and then try to figure out good ways to use it.
You bring up a really good point about inflation, because I think business owners, or I run a business, you know, one of the big questions you have is how do you take care of your employees? And if you know if their rent went up 10-15%, that if you give them a 2% raise, that's a decline in how much they've got this coming year. So that has got to be figuring into the council when you guys are deciding raises in the future.
Absolutely is. And, you know, just the cost of doing business. And yeah, and you and I, we both have businesses. We know, you know, I have to take care of my employees at work in the same way that we have to take care. But we have to take care of all of our employees at the city.
3 years, what do you see happening? I mean, we're growing like weeds out there. Do you think there's going to be more growth coming around the future?
I think there's definitely going to be more growth. You know, the Chamber just did a very interesting housing study on what we're going to need in the next 10 years. We're going to need an additional probably 10,000 housing units, whether it be single family or rental. I mean, that's – and, you know, what you're going to see at the end of this year and through 2027, you're going to see the bubble of the construction workers, the temporary workers for the data centers. They're going to peak, and then that number is going to go down drastically. So a lot of your short-term rental stuff will open up. But with your long-term employees that will be employed at the data centers, with the addition of the B1 and the B21 being restructured at Dias, that's a potential of 8,000 to 9,000 more personnel coming to Abilene in the next 10 years that we're going to need to house. So, yes, I see some very good growth, because the temporary growth will peak, but then we're going to have a lot more long-term, full-time jobs, people moving to Abilene as careers.
And that's good for the city,
It's good for the city.
More people.
Right. It's good for the city. It's good for all our businesses. It's just good for everyone. To have a little bit more controlled growth, hopefully.
Sustainable growth, right, as opposed to what's going on at the moment. It is interesting. It's a heck of a time to be in Abilene.
Interesting is a good word. You know, there's no way we could have ever predicted, you know, that it was going to be like this. You know, they told us the size and scale, but until it got here, it was just hard to predict.
Yeah. Bigger than Central Park. That's just amazing.
It's amazing.
All right.
It's huge.
Mayor Hurt, thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely.
Mayor Weldon Hurt is running unopposed in the upcoming municipal election. Early voting currently ongoing. Election day is May 2nd. By the way, we brought you conversations with the Place 4 candidates on last week's show. You can find those interviews on our website, kacu.org. And we invited the Soul Place 3 candidate, Jay Patterson, to be a part of our series. He was unavailable, but that invitation remains open. This is the West Texas Dispatch. An inspection of Camp East Montana found dozens of violations of federal standards. The congressionally mandated inspection by ICE's Office of Detention Oversight happened February 10th through 12th. The report was posted on the ICE webpage earlier this month. KTEP's Angela Kacherga spoke with attorney Randall Callinan about the violations. He represents the family of a Nicaraguan man who died at the camp earlier this year.
Mr. Callinan, let me ask you, first of all, this new report is out talking about violations at Camp East Montana, where your client was held before he died, Victor Manuel Diaz. Your thoughts as you learn some of the details of the report?
There were 49 deficiencies, whereas in previous ICE inspections of their own facilities, I think the most I've ever seen is 13. So this is far and away the worst report of any ICE detention facility. And furthermore, a whole big chunk of them had to do with excessive force, and there were many of those. It was a whole entire laundry list of problems with the use of force, as well as there's five different medical deficiencies that were noted, generally dealing with time. And of course, if you have delays in getting back to people on medical grievances, why, the condition that sparked the grievance could get a lot worse, or but potentially even cause death. Also, there wasn't enough security personnel for this particular facility, which can cause problems with individuals who are claiming that another detainee injured them. How can you watch all these people? That goes for individuals who might attempt to commit suicide, because the facility had a lot of complaints about the mental health care there at the facility.
What about your client? What's the latest? I mean, he was held there and didn't survive. What the family's very concerned. You're very concerned about the circumstances. ICE is investigating it, but says it's a presumed suicide. What would you want to say about that as you read this report?
Well, a bunch of things. One is that while we have the autopsy report from the federal government, which they basically took from the medical examiner, they took the jurisdiction from the medical examiner who should have done the autopsy. We had our own independent autopsy done. No matter how Mr. Diaz passed away, if it is suicide, there wasn't enough individuals to watch people who were suicidal, and the conditions there were so horrendous, they could have promoted suicide. So even if it was suicide, the government may very well be responsible for that based upon their lack of suicide treatment, lack of watching for suicide, and promoting the conditions which caused suicides. There wasn't enough individuals to watch people who were suicidal, and the conditions there were so horrendous, they could have promoted suicide. So even if it was suicide, the government may very well be responsible for that based upon their lack of suicide treatment, lack of watching for suicide, and promoting the conditions which caused suicides.
So just to understand, I know that they removed that autopsy from the medical examiner's report after the previous one was declared a homicide from another person detained. Did the medical facility do their own, the federal government? Did you get those results? And then are you doing a separate one? I'm not sure I understand what the latest is.
Yes, the federal government at the Army base, the Armed Forces Medical Examiner System did an autopsy on Victor Diaz at Fort Bliss Army Base, and that report has been supplied to us. Then we had a second autopsy done by Autopsy Initiative, which is a charity which is partially run by Colin Kaepernick, allows for autopsies in, I guess, for lack of a better term, suspicious circumstances.
What's the status right now?
The second autopsy has been completed, as claims and other legal actions might be possible. We're going to have to evaluate what we want to release to the public once we receive the second autopsy report.
That's KTEP's Angela Kucherga speaking with Houston attorney Randall Callinan, who represents the family of a man who died at Camp East Montana in January. Despite the 49 violations, the detention center earned an acceptable adequate rating with the recommendation that ICE work with private contractors operating the facility to resolve the deficiencies that remain outstanding. Last month, the Department of Homeland Security replaced the company with another private contractor. DHS says, quote, "This new contractor will allow Camp East Montana to continue abiding by the highest detention standards with the ability to provide more medical care on site. This contract also allows more on-site staff and a precise quality assurance surveillance program. ICE will have even more oversight of the contractors at this facility." End quote. Preventative health care is a luxury that many uninsured people can't afford. The Centers for Disease Control estimates that about 32% of Texas women over the age of 40 haven't had a mammogram in the past 2 years. In rural areas, resources to provide screenings require a communal effort. As KACU's Bailey Simon reports, one such collaboration has provided roughly 3,000 BEXA breast exams to women in the Big Country and Concho Valley over the past couple of years.
The Access to Breast Health for Texans program provides free breast exams to anyone, male or female, who is 18 or older. The program is able to offer the exams thanks to a partnership with the Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center. These exams are a departure from the notoriously uncomfortable mammograms that doctors have relied on for the last 6 decades. The BEXA medical device is about the size of a computer mouse and delivers accurate, painless, and radiation-free exams. Tamara Alexander is not only the director of rural initiatives at Texas Tech's Health Sciences Center, she's a breast cancer survivor. She says breast screenings are important because usually symptoms of breast cancer are unnoticeable in its early stages.
With my particular case, it was so tiny and so deep against my chest wall, I had no idea. Never felt anything.
Alexander went to the doctor annually for mammogram screening, which helped her catch her cancer early. She decided to do a radical double mastectomy, followed by a complete hysterectomy 3 months later. When breast cancer is caught early,
Tamara Alexander,
the 5-year
is not
relative
only
survival
the director
rate
of
is over 99%
of Texas Tech's Health
breast
Sciences
cancer
Center.
That is not
She's a breast
caught
cancer
in its early
survivor.
Stages.
She says breast screenings are
important
because
usually
symptoms
of breast
cancer
are unnoticeable
bones,
in its early
lungs,
stages
or the liver.
It is considered to be incurable with only about a 30% survival rate. According to the American Cancer Society, there is a 1 in 8 chance that a woman will develop breast cancer at some point in her life, and yet CDC data also shows that about 1 in 4 women aged 50 to 74 are not up to date on their mammograms, and women who reported costs as a barrier to access health care have about 2 times the odds of not getting a mammogram.
Women have a really hard time of putting their health care first because they have jobs, they have husbands, they have children, and they always worry about those items first, and they don't always take proactive measures for their own health.
The American Cancer Society recommends that women who don't have a family history of breast cancer get screening mammograms every year starting at age 40. Women who are 55 and older can switch to getting a mammogram every other year. Women who are at high risk for breast cancer should get a breast MRI and mammogram every year starting at age 30. But breast cancer targets women of all ages, and when someone outside of the recommendations needs a screening, it may not be covered even if they have insurance. Pearl Merritt, Senior Director of Outreach at the Laura W. Bush Institute, said that it is becoming more common for women in their 20s and 30s to get breast cancer. Merritt says that it's critical for younger women to get breast exams because research shows that women diagnosed with breast cancer before the age of 40 face significantly higher mortality rates.
When we do have the BEXA exams, there's several women in their 20s that want to come. Maybe their mother had it and their grandmother had it. They don't do a mammogram because it's not going to be paid for at that young age.
The goal of the Access to Breast Health for Texans program is to break down barriers to screening such as age, distance, and cost. Every week, the team set up in a different town in the Big Country in Concho Valley. Tamara Alexander says teams avoid holding their exams in hospital settings that could be intimidating and turn patients away.
So we try to set up in accommodating situations like churches, community centers. We've set up exam room at a boutique before. So anywhere that will host us, we are happy to go and make that work.
Instead of a cold hospital room with a large machine that evokes dread in many women, the team creates a setting that is more like a massage experience than a traditional mammogram screening. They prepare a heated massage table in a darkened room lit by a lamp, turn on calming music, and spray essential oils into the room. Wendy Stoles, a licensed sonographer, explained that the BEXA device uses sound waves to read through breast tissue. She looks for any spots that are stiffer or less elastic than the surrounding tissue. A detected spot doesn't necessarily indicate cancer. Stoll said it could be a clogged milk duct, scar tissue, or a cyst. Regardless, if the BEXA device picks up something, the sonographer then does an ultrasound within the same appointment to get more information.
So the only time they don't get results immediately is if we have to do an ultrasound, because then it has to be read by a radiologist. But still, that turnaround time is 48 hours. So that's much quicker than even a screening mammogram.
There are pros and cons to both mammograms and Beck's exams. Mammograms pick up microcalcifications, which are tiny calcium deposits in the breast tissue that may develop into cancer, more often than Beck's exams do. Overall, Alexander said both options are highly accurate and that Bexa is not in competition with mammography at all.
We always recommend do both. But women love Bexa. It's painless. There's no radiation. Pregnant women can have a Bexa exam. Women under 40 can have a Bexa exam. A man can come in and have a Bexa exam. So it touches a lot of populations and age groups that necessarily wouldn't be going in to get a routine mammogram.
And the program makes scheduling a Bexa exam painless as well. Patients pick a time slot that works for them through a link. There's no wait time, and patients are usually done with the exam in 15 minutes or less. While the partnership currently covers 24 counties around Abilene and 15 counties around San Angelo, they are working to expand further west. They hope to have a team set up in Midland, Odessa by July. I'm Bailey Simon in Abilene.
Visit our website, kacu.org, to see a video explaining how the Bexa technology works and for more information about appointment signups. The story was made in partnership with the West Texas Tribune. This is the West Texas Dispatch. Abilene is holding a ribbon cutting for two recreation centers today. When the city of Abilene decided to close both recreation centers at the same time in order to make some much-needed improvements to them, there was a little controversy. City leaders made the decision in an effort to make the construction as cost-effective as possible, but the closure meant that after-school programs would be disrupted for some families. That was in 2023. As the project at the G.V. Daniels and Cesar Chavez Recreation Centers neared completion, a new controversy hit the news. Reports that Cesar Chavez had groomed and sexually abused girls and women who were part of the United Farm Workers movement. The city council approved temporarily renaming the Cesar Chavez Center at the Recreation Center at Sears Park, while city officials worked through the official process of adopting a new permanent name. Abilene's Director of Parks and Recreation, Leslie Andrews, is here to talk to us about those newly renovated facilities. Leslie, thank you for joining us on the West Texas Dispatch.
Thank you for having me.
Well, first of all, let's remind folks about that decision to renovate these facilities. It was a $28 million investment made by the city.
It was a bond that the voters passed for two new recreation centers. One, G.V. Daniels, located at Carver Park. Most people know it as where the basketball court is at North 8th and Treadway. And the other one is the recreation center in Sears Park on Ambler Street.
Have you had a chance to walk through yet? Of course.
Oh, I do every day.
Every day. It's exciting because you drive by them and you see them and you go, pretty soon we'll get to go there.
That's right. We're very excited.
How did the community come together to find solutions for those after-school programs that had been put on hold after the construction started?
We worked with all the nonprofits and other child care facilities here in Abilene and made phone calls, worked out arrangements, helped partner with them to make sure that we found places for all the families who needed one.
So as we mentioned, those hints of allegations against Cesar Chavez, right as you were wrapping up work, you guys had to scramble all of a sudden, didn't you?
Yes, we did. We had just put the name on the building. We decided to take the name back off. That park and the recreation center had been called Sears for decades, so we are calling it Sears Recreation Center right now. At the May 19th meeting, Parks and Recreation Board will take up the discussion on what the new permanent name. I expect it to take a few months before we have a final answer.
I think it's important to note right now, too, this didn't just happen to Abilene. This happened to municipalities all over the nation. Streets had to be renamed. Parks had to be renamed. Parades got canceled. So just so you guys know, it was a big thing, obviously. This afternoon, you get to cut the ribbons. Talk about that. What are people going to see when they're there?
Oh, we're so excited to open the doors. Yes, the ribbon cutting at 1:30 at GV Daniels, at 2:15 at Sears Recreation Center. When they walk in the door, it's just the biggest thing about these new centers is how bright and airy and how well you can see throughout the whole building. We do have a library in each recreation center. That is brand new. We have a gaming room with e-gaming in both recreation centers, which is new. We have a fitness room in both recreation centers. That's new. We have a walking track inside, which is new. So when you get rained out outside, you have a new place to go within the recreation centers. And so we're very excited about that. Of course, we'll be offering our normal gym with volleyball, basketball, pickleball. Can't forget pickleball.
Oh, that's big right now.
That is huge right now. We have two classrooms in all the centers, and a lot of programming that we will be doing both on the recreation side as well as the library side, and in partnerships with both putting on programming.
Leslie, in the past, those facilities have sometimes been used, correct me if I'm wrong, but I seem to remember them being used as cooling centers during the summer at times. Do you anticipate that? Because apparently these have opened just in time.
Yes, actually, we did consider that in part of the design of these buildings to have them both as cooling centers as well as warming centers. Mm. And so in the case that it is needed, we do have generators on both buildings, so we would be able to activate the centers in the case that it's needed.
What else do we not know about those recreation centers? So if I come to tomorrow's ribbon cutting, what am I going to see that I'm just kind of blown away by?
I think it's something that Abilene has never seen before. I think a lot of what we're used to are what we would call community centers. The old centers, while they were great when they were built, they were added onto and added onto and added onto over the decades. And so it was very hard to get from one end of the building to the other. In this case, it's wide open. It's easy access all over the building. You can take your children to play volleyball, and you can go in the fitness room and work out and see through the glass to watch your kids at the same time. You don't have to worry that they're in another part of the building where you can't see what's going on. And I think that's going to be very excited. They're color coordinated. So we have a color for athletics, a color for the classroom, a color for the library. The new staff that's coming on, the programming, we're just going to make sure that if there is an opportunity, that there is something for everybody in our centers.
You got me excited. I'm very excited about going. Leslie Andrews, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Leslie Andrews is Director of the Parks and Rec for the City of Abilene. Congratulations on your projects.
Thank you.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott launched the Texas Job Council in March, an advisory board. It's intended to strengthen the state's workforce. Last week, Abbott toured community colleges across Texas, including a stop in the South Plains. KTTC's Brad Burt reports the governor is highlighting the certification programs at these schools as a way to address Texas' statewide skilled labor shortage.
Governor Greg Abbott and members of the Texas Jobs Council toured the Automotive Technology and Welding Facility on the South Plains College campus in Leveland, a specialized center where students can earn technical certifications that the governor hopes will address a shortage of skilled labor in the state.
If you just look in certain parts of the state of Texas, the demand for welders, the demand for electricians are two easy examples where we need to be cranking out thousands of these degree and certifications every single year.
An analysis recently released by the Associated General Contractors of America found Texas added more construction jobs than any other state in the last year. In West Texas, especially, data centers have been some of the most predominant development projects, but the long-term jobs that come with these facilities often require trained laborers that Texas has been lacking. Enter Texas community colleges like South Plains College, which has 74 career and technical education programs that SPC officials say are full of students who can walk straight into employment. Ray Martinez is the president and CEO of the Texas Association of Community Colleges.
There are approximately 2.6 million Texans with some college credits, but no credential. They started, they didn't finish. And those aren't just numbers, that is a workforce waiting to be activated.
Texas Jobs Council is expected to release a report in November outlining recommendations for lawmakers ahead of the legislative session next year. I'm Brad Burt in Lubbock.
It's time for West Texas Roots. There are many unique experiences that come with living in West Texas, from the bizarre weather to the incredible history. But there's one thing that no one wants to experience, that's getting bit by a rattlesnake. Jamie Greer has just such a story. She was bit by a rattlesnake while pulling weeds. Fortunately, the lesson she remembered being told and her husband's quick thinking got her to the hospital in time to receive antivenom.
Something felt like a bee sting or a spider bite. And I just threw my hand. You know, I just threw it. I looked down, there was blood. I looked back down there to see how big that spider was or if there was a wasp nest down there. And I just started looking around. And all of a sudden there it was, curled back up like I'm gonna take you on again. Stopped him from welding. He didn't believe me, so he went back to welding. I never lost my cool, probably, never yelled.
Probably heard down there to the booth from her. I was welding on the fence.
I never yelled.
She hollered at me and stuff. And I raised my helmet up, you know. What? She sat there like this. I got bit by a rattlesnake. Yeah, okay. Started welding again.
I had to say it a little bit sturdier the next time to get his attention. The best part of it was the security guard. The doctor thought the snake was still alive in the back of the truck.
We left. We live in Trent. Went down to I-20. And I was thinking, okay, Abilene, boom. Hendrick Medical Center, Abilene, okay. We got down there at the end of the road, and I thought, dummy, Sweetwater, rattlesnake roundup. They've got antivenom. So we made a right from Trent and got up on 20, boom.
I like the hospital.
Went to Sweetwater, got
there.
I like
the hospital except for when I walked up there, their emergency rooms were locked.
At Sweetwater, the emergency room doors, they were locked. Cause it was—
and I'm banging.
7, 8 o'clock at night.
It was earlier than that. It was about 5 or 6.
Well, the sun was still up.
Yeah, and I was banging. Go around front and register. I said, no, I got bit by a snake. Go around front and register.
Then I told her, I said, she got bit by a rattlesnake. They said, oh, okay, let's unlock the door.
And I'm standing there. Then one nurse, I get bit on this
hand. Guard.
They put the blood pressure cup on the same hand, arm.
Her hand was already swelled up that big. Then the security guard, are you sure it's a rattlesnake? I'm like, well, it's in the back of the truck if you want to go look. Is it still alive? Are you serious? No, I cut the head off and threw the body in there so that y'all could verify.
That's what he did. They were talking about sending me to different hospitals.
They was talking about, we can send her to Lubbock.
No.
I said, check Abilene. Well, there's no beds in Abilene. They're somewhere closer than Lubbock. Lubbock's 3 hours away from here. Okay, we can send her to San Angelo.
The first night, it was
about 10 altogether.
10.
From Sweetwater to San Angelo.
Was 10
that
vials.
That first night was about 10 vials. And then the 17, 18 antivenom vials, they discharged her. Said, okay, you know, your blood.
Next day.
Your blood and everything's good.
Yeah. It was scary. But I don't know why, I just didn't panic. For some reason, I didn't feel like panicking was a good idea.
No.
Because I've always been told.
Keep the adrenaline down, keep the blood flow slow.
That's what they always told me. But you wouldn't believe how many offers I got offered a weed eater. I'll buy you a weed eater. I got about 20 or 30 of them. People telling me, don't pull weeds, Mark. I'll get you a weed eater. So he went out and bought me a little battery-operated weed eater so I could do that instead of bending down.
Welcome to West Texas.
Number one rule, don't pull weeds.
We recorded Jamie Greer's story of her rattlesnake encounter at the Taylor County Expo Center. This is the West Texas Dispatch. On Saturday, April 25, the Abilene Philharmonic will present the final concert of that 2025-2026 season. They wrap up the season with A License to Thrill, music from James Bond movies. Our friend Greg Strawn spoke with director and conductor of the Abilene Philharmonic, David Itkin.
David, so glad you're here for this final conductor's note.
Thank you.
Well, there's a lot of great music associated with James Bond. I think about Goldfinger or Skyfall or Casino Royale. What kind of music do you have programmed on this show?
Well, everything you just said and a whole lot more. I mean, we all know these great songs, and there's the great theme songs, some of which are going to be sung, a couple of which during the program are going to be sung by this wonderful singer, Catherine Jacobson, who's a fixture of musical theater and cabaret work in the DFW area. And people are going to be knocked out by Catherine's voice. And she's going to sing Goldfinger. She's going to sing Skyfall.
Great.
And a couple of
Shirley
others.
Shirley Bassey and Adele.
Shirley Bassey, there you go. And yes, and she excels at that genre, and so she'll be with us. And then the orchestra is going to play lots of these other classic Bond things, including, of course, the main Bond music. But there's great things beyond James Bond on this program. We need to be sure we say that.
Oh,
there's action hero music from other movies and television that we're also going to be playing. There's a wonderful little medley we're going to play of TV action heroes. It's about a dozen short versions of a dozen TV theme songs of action TV
shows.
So you've
got to really pay attention
while
you're listening.
Yes, and we are going to play, of course, we had our very popular John Williams program a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And we're going to do one thing we did at the John Williams program, which is we're going to invite people up to play James Bond trivia.
Oh, wonderful.
Onto the stage, not so much about the music, but about James Bond and James Bond movies.
As the character, yeah.
And so we're going to invite people up. If you're brave, you want to start boning up on your James Bond facts and James Bond movie facts right now, and maybe come up on stage and play the trivia game with
Fantastic.
Us.
Fantastic. Well, I know a few years ago you did an all John Williams Pops concert, and the audience really loved it. The James Bond movies were scored by a variety of different composers. How is pulling this together similar to the John Williams, but also different?
Oh, it's much more difficult because John Williams is John Williams. Look at all his... The only hard part about the John Williams program, to program it, was to figure out what I have to throw out,
what
great scores by John Williams can I not fit into this program? Yeah. That was hard because you didn't want to lose anything, but we had to lose a lot because you could do four John Williams programs and not run out of music. But this, of course, is lots of different composers. So we're pulling music from different decades and different people and different sources and different orchestrators. Yeah. So in a way, that's it provides actually with a kind of a greater variety, including the music, like we said, that's not James Bond.
Right.
We've got some other TV and movie action and espionage heroes going on as well.
Well, it will be A License to Thrill. That's fantastic. David, thanks so much for being here and giving us your conductor's notes. David Itkin will conduct the Abilene Philharmonic in their final concert of the season, April 25th at 7:30 p.m. at the Abilene Civic Center. You can find out more information about this performance and how to get tickets on our website, kacu.org. I'm Greg Strawn, and you're listening to Conductor's Notes with the Abilene Philharmonic on KACU.
And before we go, we want to bring you another of our 40th birthday flashbacks. Today we hear from our former student assistant news director, Sheridan Wood.
Hi, I'm Sheridan Wood, and I'm a KACU alum. I worked at KACU while I was a student journalism major at Abilene Christian University, and in my time at KACU, which was from 2021 to 2023, I was the student assistant news director and the environmental beat reporter. KACU was an incredible training ground for me as a young journalist that really set me up for the rest of my career. I got to travel around the state and report on some environmental news that aired on the Texas Standard and even on NPR. And I got to produce so many awesome stories that I'm really proud of to this day. I think my favorite one, though, is one I produced about monarch butterflies and how the monarch butterfly migration is impacted by drought and climate change. I am just so grateful that I had the opportunity to pursue that curiosity and produce a cool story that ended up even winning some awards. I learned so much at my time at KACU, not just some of the technical skills that are vital and I'm so grateful to have about, you know, how to record tape, how to produce a radio story and get something on the air, but also a lot of really important soft skills for me as a journalist that I have carried over with me into the rest of my career. How to interview people, how to find stories. So after my time at KACU, I spent some time in Washington, D.C. as an environmental regulations reporter, and now I'm in Missoula, Montana, where I study at the University of Montana. I'm getting a master's degree in environmental science and natural resource journalism with a concentration in environmental public health. KACU means so much to me personally. It's where I feel like I grew up as a reporter. It's where I really developed a love and passion for reporting and a love and passion for local news. I see KACU as kind of one of the last lines of defense against West Texas becoming a complete news desert. KACU is so vital to the Abilene community, and I really, really value what KACU gave to me as a young reporter, and also what I felt I was able to contribute to my community as a reporter at KACU during my time there. So big thank you to KACU for 40 years of amazing public service, and cheers to 40 more. From Missoula, Montana, I'm Sheridan Wood.
And we've recently learned that Sheridan's adventures and education will continue. She's been selected as Critical Language Scholar, which will take her to Morocco this summer, where she will further her Arabic language skills. This has been the West Texas Dispatch. Thanks for tuning in. We're here each Wednesday at noon. We hope you plan to join us. And hey, tell a friend. And if your friend isn't able to tune in on Wednesdays at noon, you let them know. They can always subscribe to the podcast. West Texas Dispatch is available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can even find it on the KACU mobile app. Our executive producer is Heather Claiborne. And we had help from our team of producers, including Shayla Conley and Caleb Leger. Our digital editor is Calvin Claiborne. Special thanks to J.C. Gamble, who wrote our theme. I'm George Levesque.